This is the story of a political pundit who looked at the world around him and just said, fuck it. Gives the middle finger to authority and says, kiss my ass. But instead of a revolution, he started a podcast. Just what the world needs.
He started a podcast.
Another basic white guy who
started a podcast.
But it's fun because he curses.
All through the podcast.
I'm fucking the
It's springtime. You know what that means, right, unfuckers? Time for our membership drive. Listen, we need your support. With your support so far, we've grown from a bi-weekly podcast to a weekly podcast with a bonus show in show notes. We have a brand spanking new website with fresh news content and a host of vital resources for progressives. We launched our own coffee line in partnership with Native Coffee Traders on the Puspatuck Reservation. Launched a YouTube channel, which now has over 5,000 subscribers. Started a weekly newsletter that's growing exponentially, and another weekly newsletter for members only. And all of this takes time, money, and resources. The equipment, the greatest audio engineer in the world, 99's vegan diet, my hair products, music licenses, podcast hosting platforms, software, whiskey. I mean, look, we don't have advertisers because nobody's going to sponsor something called Unfucking the Republic. And that's on me. So we're entirely supported by memberships and coffee purchases. Together, these cover about 50% of the cost to run UNFTR. The other 50% is out of pocket from our day jobs. So we're looking for you to help us close the gap, and then some, so that we can continue to add resources. We don't want to just stop here. And so here endeth the sales pitch. With a special thanks to our over-caffeinated members who go way above and beyond in their financial support. Members like Alfie and Flash, Asshole, Brie X, Cindy S, David MJ, and Eric Wagner 101, Goat, in the memory of Per Harold Utison, Glenn, G-Wookie of Ohio, Jason, Cringy, Leanne R, Mark OF, Maria from Puerto Rico, Matthew, Michelle H, Nathan E, Nathan Surst, Nettie Hugger 1, PDX Squatch, Pete M, Rob Nasby, Rodrigo G, Sherman Dreadnought, Sloppy Joe, Snail Powered, Sultan, Terry C, the younger PDX Squatch, Todd J, Video Eng Alex, W Jeremy D, and the memory of Nettie McGee.
UNFTR.
He'll never get elected after the grab him by the P-Tang comments.
He can't hire his kids in the administration, right?
He was trying to make a real estate deal in Russia.
He's a Russian operative.
Look at him. He's cozying up to North Korea.
They're gonna get him on these impeachments.
He cheated on his pregnant wife with an adult film star and then paid hush money to her from campaign funds.
COVID's gonna take him out.
Swallow bleach to beat COVID?
91 indictments.
Even he can't survive these.
He tried overthrowing the government, for Christ's sake. He can't run for office ever again.
He might do jail time after all.
He can't even come up with the money for this bond. They're gonna seize his assets.
Got elected. There was no P-tape. Thumbed his nose at the emoluments clause. Hired his kids. Hung out with Kim Jong-un. Impeached, but stayed in office. Twice. His lawyer went to jail for the hush money fiasco, but he didn't. Didn't die of COVID. Still not in jail. Eligible to run. And now, his net worth, as of this recording, just increased somewhere between $4 and $6 billion.
And it's an astonishing windfall for Donald Trump. His fortune just skyrocketed as Truth Social stock takes off.
Trading began for the Trump Media and Technology Group, parent to his Truth Social media platform. The firm ended the day at nearly $58 per share with a total valuation of $7.9 billion.
On its first day of trading, the Trump Media and Technology Group, after its post-SPAC debut, they basically did a SPAC merger with Digital World Acquisition, as you mentioned, the new ticker, DJT, difficult to forget with the former president, his initials, of course. And against the parent company of Truth Social, more than $275 million in capital, a win for Trump amid legal and financial woes, we should say. And at current levels, Trump's shares are worth, it's hard to calculate at this moment, at 11, when it was up 11%, that his shares would be worth $6 billion. So many, many multiples of that.
And remember the bond that he had to post? They just reduced the amount, so he'll likely be able to manage it without selling any assets. People, he's not going to jail. He's going to run for office. He'll make that bond. No one is seizing his assets. No one is locking him up. He's Donald J. Trump, and he runs shit around here.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now.
The only thing we value more than wealth is celebrity. And this guy's got both. Even if his wealth is inflated and he got rich by screwing people over, he shits on a golden toilet and that's enough for people. Even if his celebrity is from reality television and just generally being a high-profile douchebag, he's famous as fuck. And the presidency made him arguably the most famous person on planet Earth. The rich and the powerful in this country do not pay for their sins, unless they commit them against other rich and famous people, like Madoff did. How many bankers went to jail for the financial crisis? Answer, one. Some low-level dude from Credit Suisse that you've never heard of. How many Bush administration officials stood trial for war crimes in Iraq? None. Kanye West is a virulent anti-Semite who sympathizes with actual Nazis, and he just dropped a new album. In America, we lavish praise upon the rich and famous and imprisoned whistleblowers. The only time that things go sideways for the elite is when they turn on one another. That's the cardinal sin. Those who walk in the halls of power are in a fraternity. Delta Phi Beta, go fuck yourself. And guess what? You're not in it.
Chapter 1. Blank check.
Well, he pulled it off. Possibly. Well, probably. Most people read the headlines and see Donald Trump's company just went public, thereby adding billions to his billions. The reality of the situation is both more complicated and actually simpler. It's simple in that the mechanism that Trump used to get his Truth Social company listed on the NASDAQ is the most straightforward way to do so. I'll explain more on that in a bit. What's more complex is this mechanism has fallen out of favor with regulators and investors, and Trump's particular case is more of a shit show than these things are normally. Imagine that. So let's start with the basics and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of Trump's new company. The process of taking a company public is long, arduous, and very, very expensive. Most companies that go public are already very successful and seeking exponential growth by accessing capital in the public markets. It typically takes years to build enough critical mass and consistent revenue growth, along with healthy profit margins, to get there. Assuming you have such a company, the regulatory gauntlet you have to pass through is formidable and requires multiple experts. Underwriters, insurers, investment bankers, and so many attorneys come together to create a package with an estimated value. Then the leaders or owners of the company hit the road to raise money prior to an initial public offering from savvy inside investors that will get a premium on their initial investment when or if the company ever goes public. Everything and everyone is vetted along the way. Transparency, they say, is essential. Company performance over an extended period is critical. Seasoned executives with experience at the helm is a must. Early investors with a track record send important signals to Wall Street. Insurance companies back up the financial claims that are themselves backed up by external auditing firms. The SEC will conduct forensic audits and bury the management team with compliance requirements. Only then will the investment bankers attempt to place a value on the offering and test the waters in the market. The other type of company that follows this path is the unicorn. It could be hemorrhaging money month after month, but it's so special that it doesn't matter. Think Amazon. It took Jeff Bezos 9 years to turn a profit at Amazon, long after it had gone public. Same thing for Tesla, which had its first profitable quarter 10 years after its founding. High-growth companies like these usually have very deep-pocketed investors that are well-respected on Wall Street and stories so unusual that they enter the whole public's imagination. FedEx, Amazon, Tesla, ESPN. And then there's Truth Social. Trump's Truth Social has been a disaster from the beginning. First off, it's lousy tech. Second, it's bleeding cash, and there's no appreciable revenue model in sight. The last published financials on the company prior to going public showed that Truth Social managed to lose about $49 million through 9 months in 2023 on around $3.3 million in revenue. It's estimated that the platform has somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 million active users, which is a rounding error compared to the behemoth social platforms. And not to go all Hillary Clinton on you by calling the users deplorable, but when you consider the demographic information on those 5 million users, I'm guessing that it's not all that advertiser-friendly.
Hey, don't be an elitist. That's why people hate progressives.
Nah, you're right. My bad. I'm sure there are plenty of ammunition and survival kit companies out there that want to advertise on the platform.
Ugh, you're doing it again.
Ah, you're right. My bad. The point is that these companies thrive on data mining and monetizing said data through advertising or with data brokers. So 5 million is nothing. Trump would be better off selling Bibles.
I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Anyway, Truth Social is not a unicorn. There's nothing remarkable about it, and it has literally no upside. It will never be profitable. Its revenue is about the size of an average independent pharmacy on your local street corner. It has somewhere between 50 and 200 employees, though most are likely subcontractors. In other words, it's a scam. Now, to make matters more interesting, it went public inside of a shell company that also has no revenue, only a handful of employees, and no other purpose than to get Truth Social listed on a public exchange. So it's a scam within a scam, promoted by the biggest scam artist on the planet. Truth Social is the brand held within Trump's company called Trump Media and Technology, but we'll refer to it as Truth Social for the ease of things. It merged with a company called Digital World, which now goes by the ticker symbol DJT, which stands for Dumb Jackoff Turd. Now, Digital World is no ordinary company, no sir. It's what's known as a SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company. These are publicly traded investment vehicles created for the sole purpose of acquiring or merging with an existing private company, effectively taking that company public without having to go through the traditional IPO process. Now, SPACs have been around for several decades, but they gained popularity in the early 2000s. They're referred to on Wall Street as blank check companies because that's essentially what they are. Money in search of an idea. The first modern SPAC is widely considered to be the Jumbo Kingdom deal in 1997, where David Baker, a lawyer and an investment banker, used a SPAC to acquire the Jumbo Floating Restaurant in Hong Kong. This success helped establish the SPAC model as a legitimate way to take companies public. But it was a tech bro named Chamath Palihapitiya who set the SPAC world ablaze. And thankfully, I don't have to continue butchering his last name because in the investment world, he's known simply as Chamath, like Madonna or Bono. Now, for a while, Chamath was the fucking man. He came through Facebook, where many credited him as the agent of change in the halls of the social giant. From there, he went on to become a glitzy Renaissance investor. When Chamath spoke, people listened. When he invested, they followed. He made a fortune on Facebook and Tesla, and they seemingly couldn't miss. So when he announced that he was going big into the world of SPACs, it was fucking game on. Now, Chamath rolled out SPACs one after the other. He was so bold, he simply referred to them alphabetically, listing them as IPO A, IPO B, and so on. And the rush was on. Rates were dirt cheap, money was flowing from the government during the pandemic, and Chamath was shilling for SPACs like the ShamWow guy. And it wasn't just tech bros who were eating it up. It was literally all of Wall Street. So what Chamath and others figured out was that high-profile people from celebrities to Wall Street titans could skip the hard part of going public and just get listed with a filing and a promise. The idea people are called sponsors or promoters. Now, these promoters rally individual investors or institutional investors around a very loose concept, a holding company in search of something to hold, if you will. These initial investors come in at very favorable terms, typically with something called warrants, which allows them to purchase severely discounted shares of the SPAC once it's listed on an exchange. The trick here, however, is all about timing. The SPAC usually has a limited amount of time, between 12 and 18 months, to identify an acquisition. And even these early investors are prohibited from cashing in their shares for a determined period of time to ensure that the SPAC is something more than a glorified pump and dump scheme. The funds are held in a trust account until the SPAC identifies a target company to acquire, and once it's identified, the SPAC undergoes a merger or an acquisition, effectively taking the target public. So if the SPAC fails to complete an acquisition within a specified time frame, it has to return all the funds to the investors. And in many ways, this is kind of a best case scenario, because if the SPAC invests in a company that then fails, then the investors are on the hook for it. So the upside, in theory, is enormous. For investors, SPACs provide an opportunity to invest in early stage companies with the potential for high returns, often without the same level of risk associated with traditional IPOs. For target companies, SPACs offer a faster and more predictable path to going public, as well as access to capital and, sometimes, experienced management teams. Now, despite all their benefits, SPACs also come with huge risk. One major risk is that investors in the SPAC lose their entire investment if it fails to complete that acquisition. Additionally, the terms of the merger or the acquisition could be unfavorable to existing shareholders, leading to a dilution of their ownership stake. Then there's the fact that regulators hate these vehicles. I mean, hate. Like every other public company, SPACs are subject to regulation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, and some other regulatory bodies like FINRA, similar to other publicly traded companies. However, there are some differences in the regulatory requirements for SPACs, particularly regarding disclosure and reporting obligations. In each passing year, the SEC is making it more and more difficult for SPACs to maneuver because, well, for the most part, they suck. For example, literally none of Chamath's SPACs ever worked out. In fact, they've been a disaster. The ones that survived the holding period are down significantly. Others either closed or never even got off the ground, which has made Chamath somewhat of a pariah in investment circles. Now, for his part, he mostly blames high interest rates, but the fact of the matter is that most SPACs simply didn't deliver on the promise because they skipped the line, and they were all sizzle and no steak.
Chapter 2, Trump's Spastic SPAC.
Nice work if you can get it. That's how Morningstar VP of Research John Reckentaylor describes the SPAC gambit. Here's how he describes the funding scheme behind SPACs generally and how it applies to Trump's platform. Quote, "The ladder of SPAC investors contains five rungs, four of which are occupied by institutions. On the top are one, the SPAC sponsor, and two, the underwriter, which put up little money. Further down the ladder are three, the investors who deliver the seed capital, and four, pipe investors. Those two parties supply the merger's cash while receiving volume discounts. Finally comes the public, which buys its shares on the secondary market. It obtains no special favors. In other words, public shareholders pay a SPAC's way. It must be so. If each of the other four parties collect fees from the SPAC or receive discounted shares, then the fifth party must foot the bill. The math insists. That holds particularly true with Digital World for two reasons. One, the company's pipe investors received unusually favorable terms. Two, its acquisition target is a shell that brings no assets to the bargain. Thus, public shareholders are twice diluted, once by the SPAC's insiders, and then again by Trump Media and Technology's ownership stake." End quote. That even Trump would find an unusual way to go about an already unusual investment should come as no surprise. Once again, the chief grifter in charge had to pony up little, if anything, other than his name. In return, he receives extremely favorable terms on this investment of nothing. According to some analysts, just the cash portion of what he received once it went public was in the hundreds of millions, which would be enough to cover his bond in theory. But it's the valuation of the stock that everyone is really focused on. Now, before we get there, let me explain just how much of a grift this thing is, because as we know, Trump associates himself with only the best people. To be clear, there is some big institutional money behind this. Susquehanna International, LPL Financial, and a host of other wealth management firms and family offices. But those are the so-called pipe investors that take the big risk for the warrants or the discounts. It's the promoters, the guys that put the whole thing together in the first place, that are super interesting. Here are the list of names of the promoters that conceived of the Digital World SPAC. Patrick Orlando, Luis Orleans Braganza, Bruce Gerlich, Justin Shaner, Brian Shevland, Eric Swider, and Lee Jacobson.
You might as well have said Warren Buffett, Mark Cuban, Bill Ackman, and Carl Icahn.
Yep, it's a real who's who.
More like who dat.
Exactly. So let's start with Patrick Orlando, the original CEO. Orlando is a little-known financier from Florida whose impressive resume includes a defunct biofuel company in Peru, a deal with Venezuela to finance tugboats, and another venture in China. The only real record of his accomplishments lay in the trove of lawsuits he typically left in his wake, such as Benesseri Capital Acquisition Corporation, and remember that name. But he had enough to muster up a $25,000 investment into the Digital World SPAC, and he knew how to organize one from Benesseri. His stake is purportedly worth now, get this, around $600 million, even though he was ousted from the company. Then there's a weird Brazilian connection. Luis Orleans Braganza was the founding CFO of the company. Orleans Braganza is generally referred to as Prince because of familial ties to Brazil's last emperor, a position that he believes should be reestablished. And oh boy, does he know just the guy who could fill that. Anyway, he was a vocal supporter of Donald Trump and maintained very close ties with Jair Bolsonaro, who I believe is now on the run. Anyway, he's also no longer with the company. Or Bruce Gerlich, formerly of Rocket One Capital and other financial startups, who was on the founding board. The SEC filed charges against Gerlich this week for trading in advance of the SPAC announcement through Rocket One. Now, another fancy term for that would be insider trading. Founding board member Justin Shaner was also associated with the defunct and troubled Benesseri Capital, which was subpoenaed by the SEC just last year. Brian Shevland of Bluestone Capital Management, also a founding member of Digital World, was just suspended by the SEC from acting as a broker. Eric Swider was also a Benesseri guy. And Lee Jacobson was involved in multiple failed ventures, including Appmetrics Analytics, which was liquidated in Chapter 7 proceedings in 2019.
Damn, these really are the best people. Chapter 3. What happens next is what always happens next.
So what happens next is interesting. Now, the first part is a guess. The second part you can bank on. First part is that I'm guessing the Trump-controlled board offers him special dispensation and removes the prohibition on selling stock before the six-month mark. Now, I don't think it'll happen immediately, but I do think it will happen in short order when things kind of come out of the headlines and as his trials heat up.
Oh, and the campaign too, right?
Yeah, right. Trump won't use a penny of this money on the campaign. That's what the suckers at the super PACs and the RNC are for. That and the truckload of free daily media that he always gets. So the second part is way more bankable. At some point, Digital World, ticker DJT, owner of Truth Social, has to actually perform. The people that put this together originally have all made a killing. The investors, even the institutional ones, however, are in a position now of tremendous risk because the company now officially exists. So unless Digital World has some other acquisition up its sleeve, I mean like a real one, then this one is fucked. This is GameStop. It's a pure pump and dump scheme, except it's not gamer and crypto bros fucking with the system. This is real people and real companies pouring real money into a publicly listed company that has a valuation of around $8 billion today for a holding company with an asset that generates about $4 million in revenue and $50 million in losses. Never, and I mean never, in the history of investing has math made less sense. But you know this much. Donald J. Trump won't get hurt. Can't get hurt. He's already won because of the upfront fees he participated in. I mean, if it goes no further than that, he's good. And if the board grants him the ability to liquidate his shares in the coming weeks before the whole fucking thing explodes, then he will have literally pulled off the con of the century. Shit, maybe longer. But I guess what amazes me is no matter how many times or how many ways he fucks people over, there will be those who give him a pass. And many who will applaud him for it. It's like that moment in the debate with Hillary Clinton when he was accused of dodging taxes and he was like, yeah, that's what makes me smart. And then when he went to Michigan and told the auto workers that, you know, I might hate unions, but I hate management more. And they loved it. And when this thing goes belly up, he'll talk shit about the investment banks and the Wall Street types and tell his followers, fuck them, they deserved it. And they'll cheer and they'll laugh. They'll buy the merchandise, maybe even a Trump Bible. But most importantly, they'll vote for him. After this latest move, it is official. He is the greatest con man who ever lived. Here endeth the lesson.
It's the end of the episode where we used to do show notes. Now we just talk through a few things. Reflect on what was said or what we should have done instead. Oh, post-show musings.
Hey everybody, welcome into post-show musings. As we divulged in show notes this week, this is our last official day in our original studio. And what a time it's been. We are moving the studio location as part of our day job move, going to a new location that I'm really excited about. I do not know what the sound quality is going to be in the new place. We're going to have some work to do on it. We talked a little bit about that in show notes, so I won't go over it now. But suffice to say, it's late at night as I'm recording this. After I'm done, I'm going to be packing up the studio and getting ready for the big move. So it's going to be weird and wild over the next several days, just trying to get our proverbial poop in a group. Play the clip, Manny.
We all want our poop in a group.
And, you know, thinking about this episode, so this comes on the heels of the Republican playbook. For what it's worth, I am still in the throes of putting together the Over the Borderline series, which is proving trickier because of scheduling and this move, because, again, I'm trying to do a different thing with that. So it's part episode, part phone a friend. So nailing down schedules, getting the right voices in these episodes to provide context, because this is stuff that's unfolding right now. It's really, you know, it's on the ground stuff and it requires a different level of expertise. So, but I'm obsessed with this particular merger and something else, which is this is about Wall Street and corporate America and the real bad guys. This is about the oligarchy. This is about the inverted totalitarianism. This is about the ultimate outcropping of the neoliberal philosophy that could only have ended this way with corporations in charge of everything. You think about the fuckery that is involved in putting these SPACs together and how they're just pure bullshit. They're not even gambles. They're gambles for the investment community, but for the douchebags that are organizing these things, they're barely a gamble because of the extraordinary fees that they're able to con people into doing. Now, there are really no new SPACs going on. This is such a unique case because, you know, obviously Trump, because people got hip to the fact that these things, they suck. I think it's something on the order of 90% of them have so dramatically underperformed just the S&P in the last 5 years, it's laughable. And like half of them, truly, they did fail or they never found that investment. So again, that investment actually, the way that the pipes and the institutional investors are protected is if the money is never actually deployed, it just means that the company sat on it, they'll take a haircut on the fees that were taken out of it, but they actually do get their cash back. It's when they're fully vested in the property itself, when the thing goes live and it's go time, that they are most at risk with their capital. Now, most people are going to say, ah, fuck them, right? And you know what? Yeah, fuck them. Fuck them if they lose that money. But just the fact that somebody like Trump and these other grifters, when I tell you these guys are fucking grifters, every single one of them. I mean, did you hear that board? There isn't a clean guy on that board. And the Brazil connection, I think that we have yet to figure out exactly what the hell that's all about or what these other SPACs were really intended to do. We do know that the ones that were held by the guys that formed other ones had all failed spectacularly as well, right? So it is a grift and a con. The point is, this kind of stuff will go unpunished if it all comes unraveled. And the people who wind up making out are the ones that always wind up making out because they write the rules or they legislate against them or they become president and they just wave a magic fucking wand and make it all okay. But the greed and the complicity of the financial industry, of Wall Street, is staggering. And they do it to us every time. In the run-up to the financial crisis, it was all these convertible swaps and the collateralized debt obligations and the mortgage-backed securities. I got my CDO tied up in the MBS. And it all came crashing down because these guys didn't understand what they were doing. They didn't understand what the inverted valuation would be of these things if people couldn't afford to pay their mortgages. Alan Greenspan, that fuck, raising rates and putting people out of their homes after he told them to get convertible variable mortgages. Raising rates 11 times after he announced that at the Fed meeting. Rates are going to stay low for a long time. Go get a variable mortgage. You won't get hurt. And he raised the rates. No, I'm sorry. It was 18 times. After that, in succession, one meeting after the other, after the other, after the other, until people couldn't afford their homes and the whole thing went belly up because they've rigged the system. And just that one guy from Credit Suisse went to jail, and even the judge had a hard time pounding the gavel and giving him his only 30-month sentence, by the way. He was the only guy that did time. The establishment does what the establishment does. And here we are left holding the bag. We don't get to play around with billions of dollars. Can you imagine your net worth overnight without scratching a lottery ticket increasing by billions of dollars for having done nothing except put together a company that lost $49 million? By the way, this is Elon Musk's whole story. Like that story about Tesla not turning a profit for 10 years. First of all, he didn't found it. He came in as an investor because after PayPal was sold, which Peter Thiel built, and he took the credit for it, even though he was the one running it into the ground before he actually cashed out after Peter Thiel grew the thing. Elon Musk takes that. He invests in Tesla, comes in a year later, insists that he's the head of the company, rides the wave. Well, how did they get started? A $680 million loan, low interest loan from the government. Thanks, government. And how did they continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger? Through government incentives for people to buy electric vehicles. And then what did the government do today? They're going to put electric charging stations all around. And then they're going to legislate fossil vehicles, combustion engines, out of existence in just a matter of years, which will just continue to enhance the value of these type of companies. Again and again and again, Elon Musk never created anything, never built anything, never turned a profit on his own, ever. And he's the richest guy on the fucking planet. Jeff Bezos built a better mousetrap, legitimately, and then created the antitrust example of all examples. But even that guy, 9 years, didn't turn a profit. I don't know about you. I run a small business. 9 years without a profit? 9 years without a profit. Do you think I'd be able to take it to the public markets through a SPAC and say, woohoo, invest in me. I've got a losing proposition. I hemorrhage money. I mean, It's so frustrating. And we bicker and we bicker, and they, you know, and they throw, you know, woke politics around, and they wrap themselves in the flag, and they talk about Jesus Christ and values, and they take away bodily autonomy, and there's an assault on all things that help people in this country on the Republican side. And the Democrats are so busy on their back foot pretending that they give a shit about people while they're the ones that are taking donations from Wall Street. Look at Chuck Schumer's donations. Think that guy's clean? That guy's so far in the pocket of Wall Street, he can taste the lint. I'm going to trademark that. Just came up with that. They're all complicit. Every single one of them. And the regulators, like the SEC, I told you it hates SPACs. They're always lagging. Why are they lagging? Because Wall Street will always invent new ways to fuck around. And then when they finally get caught, it's only after the markets tank. And then the SEC comes in after the fact and they're like, hey, guys, don't do that again. And they're like, sorry. And they've moved on. And no one goes to jail. They will always push the envelope. They'll call it innovation. It's not. There's nothing new. There's nothing innovative about money. Money is what money's always been. You can call it Bitcoin. You can call it Dogecoin. You can call it whatever you want. If it buys something that you need, it's money. And all they do is find new ways to put more of it in their pockets. The corporations are the ones we need to direct our animus towards. These parties, this duopoly that we have, they're just shills. They're just carrying the bag. They're carrying Wall Street's water. They're carrying the big corporations' water. They know it. We kind of know it. But then we just get lost in the nonsense. Anyway, thanks to this studio for the time that we've had together, looking at these four walls. It's been real. Looking forward to the next chapter on Fuckers. I'll catch you on the flip side. Help us out. Take out a membership. Let's take this thing to the next level. Peace.